Our friend Nate Wilcox is a man of many words, and he uses most of them on this episode of the Plutopia podcast. Listen as Nate gives us his version of the State of the Union. It comes at you fast and furious, so wear a helmet.
The big tech money guys have all clearly gone over to Trump. Some of them, like Peter Thiel and Alex Karp of Palantir, are clearly vying to replace the deep state, or it's like the IT guy pulling a coup in the office because Palantir was created by the CIA. And, you know, so there's these internal battles within the deep state happening in the Trump administration. It's still impossible for me to figure out what went on with Elon Musk. I mean, and we're also in this environment where companies like Tesla, whose financials make no sense, they lose massive amounts of money every quarter. They're losing market share hand over fist. If we weren't keeping Chinese electric vehicles out of America, Tesla would be dead in the water. And we're becoming the sort of technological hermit kingdom where Americans don't even know what's available in the rest of the world, where most American citizens, like if you grew up in Joplin, Missouri, and most of those people that live in Joplin, Missouri don't travel outside Joplin, Missouri very often, much less gallivant off to China and Shanghai and see how the first world lives, have no context for what's going on Earth.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Plutopia News Network podcast. I'm John Lepkoski, and I'm a content creator. And my partner, Scoop, is also a content creator. And our co-host, Wendy Grossman, is also a content creator. We all create content. Our guest today is Nate Wilcox, a content creator and a podcaster, just like us. But he's got different podcasts. He has a Let It Roll music podcast, which is pretty fantastic. And it's been around for like 7 years. And he's also publisher of the MMA Draw podcast and newsletter on the subject of mixed martial arts fighting and combat sports. In a past life, Nate was a political strategist and consultant, which likely prepared him to cover combat sports, right? Okay. And he still follows politics, I imagine, pretty closely. And he occasionally joins us here on the Plutopia podcast to dance the apocalypso. Welcome, Nate.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So what's happening in your world?
Same you're probably witnessing in your world. It's, personally, circumstances are pretty fine, but the political environment is alarmingly unstable, and there's no intellectual center to anything that's going on right now. We're in this collapse of the center, and nothing has come along to replace it. I guess we've got two alternatives, and some people would say that Trump's MAGA revolution has replaced the pre-existing political order. I certainly feel like we're in a post-constitutional order, which is alarming and makes everything very uncertain. I mean, I know how to prognosticate elections fairly well, but I don't really know how to prognosticate when you don't know if elections are going to be held or if votes are going to be counted or, you know, what kind of manipulation or pre or post facto violence might go on. But, you know, I don't want to make that a partisan thing, because one thing that gets totally overlooked to an alarming degree to me is the two assassination attempts on Trump last year. I mean, it's like both of those were just memory hold. And I'm like, what's up with that? You know,
what was the second? I remember the one where they,
there was the one that actually nicked him in the ear with the kid that was killed in Pennsylvania. And then there was a stalker in Florida who was extremely close to, I believe, was it Mar-a-Lago, but it could have been one of his other mansions. But and it was a guy, you know, the first perpetrator, alleged perpetrator, was like he was created in a lab to be, you know, a patsy, an assassin patsy, like had no social media fingerprints or anything, extremely young kid. And the second one had extensive ties to Ukraine and Ukrainian extreme right wing groups, which is who we're funding to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars. And then it just. You know, news on that one really vanished fast. And just something very spooky. And, you know, now this last weekend, we're going through this weird weekend at Bernie's thing with Trump, where there's massive online speculation about his health. We've seen the swollen right hand, I believe, and the bruised right hand for several months now. Then there was, what, 5 days with no public appearances. And then when he did reappear, it's from a distance and it's a golfing game and he did not look healthy. I mean, again, it's totally possible to get carried away in flights of fancy about what might be going on. But after, you know, surviving the Biden administration, where the facts are the guy was completely senile and that was covered up in a conspiracy of both his aides and the media. You know, it was really funny to watch Jake Tapper going around writing a book revealing all this stuff when he's one of the people who actively covered it up while it was happening. So, you know, there's definitely a feeling like the presidency, we can elect a president, but it doesn't necessarily change. We don't know who's in charge. You know, if these senile guys can be in there toddling around and we don't know who's in charge in either instance. And in a lot of instances, it's the same people from administration to administration, the you know, fabled deep state that Trump was supposed to do something about, but obviously isn't. It's just weird times. I mean, do you remember, was it a couple of weeks ago, Trump was on the roof of the White House in a totally unexplained incident? And today,
I thought that was hilarious. Yeah, I actually saw a video yesterday of there was somebody in the White House throwing a bunch of stuff out a window.
I was just about
and
to
the speculation out. Was that, yeah, Melania was throwing him out or something.
I mean, you know, anything's possible, and it's extremely alarming when you combine it with, you know, his willy-nilly approach to tariffs and international negotiations. And he just lost a court case, a court ruling, I'm sure it'll be appealed or whatever, about sending the National Guard and the U.S. Marines into Los Angeles. Meanwhile, he's already doing it again in D.C. And there's, you know, talk, I believe they've set up a revolving task force of troopers that are ready to be deployed anywhere at his whim. And so, you know, these are the proverbial strange times. I think that the death of the constitutional order definitely happened on January 7th, 2021, when Trump wasn't immediately rounded up after breaking our 200 plus year tradition of peaceful transfers of power. And the fact that they let, you know, Mitch McConnell and McCarthy, the House GOP speaker, both on the record or recorded saying, you know, they would prosecute Trump for what he did on January 6th. As of January 7th, they were down to impeach him, arrest him, prosecute him. Democrats, you know, did the Pelosi, hey, everybody go home for the weekend and we'll reconvene. You know, it's like they're clinging to this illusion of normality. It reminds me of a horror movie where, you know, the kid's seen the boogeyman or whatever, and grandma's not willing to admit that something's going wrong or can't perceive that there's a monster in the house. You know, it, just this insistence on clinging to this illusion of normality allowed Trump, you know, to come back. I mean, Merrick Garland, I mean, the idea of handing over prosecution of an attempted coup, which is what January 6th was, over to Merrick Garland, you know, the definition of bureaucratic haplessness to prosecute was just kind of staggering. But here we are. What other topics did you want to hit?
The whole thing about Trump's well-being, a lot has been written about possibility of dementia. And I watched my mom go through that, and I see a lot of similarities in, you know, really getting angry for no good reason and making outrageous demands. And that's Trump to a T right there. Do you think that would be something that would actually disqualify him? Or, you know, we've had some pretty demented presidents before.
I mean, in theory, it should, but of course, it should have disqualified Biden. But Trump's showing many of the same symptoms. He's dragging his right foot. If you listen to statements he's made in the last year versus, you know, his speech patterns 5 years ago or 8 years ago, he's much less articulate. He uses shorter sentences. He tends to repeat stock phrases more and more. has clearly degenerated quite a bit. But this is a weird thing that's happened with multiple presidencies. I mean, George W. Bush in the 2000s had symptoms of cognitive decline, and he was a much younger man. I mean, if you compare his G.W. Bush's speeches when he was running for governor of Texas in the 1990s with the statements he would make while he was in the White House, he spoke in paragraphs in the 90s, and by the 2000s, he was stammering out, you know, barely could stammer out phrases. He couldn't even get a cliche like "fool me once, shame on me" out correctly. And you know, Trump seems to be in the same situation, but it's very hard to get a handle on who's who inside the Trump White House. I mean, with Biden, it became apparent, especially once he had been pressed out of office, that there was a cabal, that there were layers like an onion, and that the very tightest layer was Jill, the First Lady's chief of staff, who was probably the most powerful person to ever hold that position in U.S. history. Hunter Biden at one point was kind of acting POTUS in that last week before Biden threw in the towel. You know, and there was one of his Delaware political consultants who had come out of retirement. Like, he, all the staffers had quit. Ron Klein, everybody had said, "Hey, we're out. You need to step down." And including his Delaware mafia, except one guy who came out of retirement to advise him in that last week. With Trump, for the life of me, I cannot figure out who is what in the depths of the White House. I mean, it's very clear Stephen Miller has a power base and does his thing on the immigration side. It's clear that the Secretary of the Treasury has a lot of power and is probably the guy who pushed Elon Musk out of the White House, might be the guy who punched Elon Musk. You remember when Elon Musk had the black eye? That was believed, is it Besant? That's the Secretary of the Treasury. And he seems to have pushed out, I want to say Navarro, that was the Commerce Secretary. But, you know, Jared Kushner and Trump's daughter don't seem to be involved in this round of the administration, or if they are, they're keeping extremely quiet. His sons have mostly been quiet and don't seem to be inside the White House, although they're in the thick of the $6 billion cryptocurrency scam that Trump has pulled off. I mean, $6 billion. The guy is running a grift to the tune of $6 billion while he's sitting in the White House. This is unbelievable nonsense that any functioning polity would take care of. And we are not a functioning polity. We do not have a functioning judiciary. A legislature is bought and paid for. I mean, ever since the 1974 law that legalized PACs and said money was speech, we've been on this downward slide to this point where now we have a legislator that is so bought and paid for, nobody takes any of these people seriously, except for one or two outliers, and we can talk about that in a minute. But, you know, for the most part, both parties, these people are ciphers that are bought and paid for and strictly, you know, propose legislation that their sponsors tell them to. And, you know, so the legislature has no credibility whatsoever. It's supposed to be the arm of the government that controls the finances. It's supposed to be the arm of the government that declares war. When, you know, that's been out for 50 plus years. You know, that now we're talking about the president might or might not choose to attack Venezuela with no, you know, constitutional approval, no casus belli. He might get into another act of war with Iran. You know, that could heat up again. And it's, what do you do with this?
I mean, well, I'm surprised that the guy can just sit there and write executive orders where he has no authority to do something. And I mean, if somebody gives you an order and they don't have the authority to give you an order, why do you follow the order? It seems weird to me.
The Supreme Court, Robert's Supreme Court ruled the president can basically do anything. And if you look...
Did they? I mean, I don't think they said that.
They said that he can't be prosecuted for anything during his
But that doesn't mean that he can do things that authority to do.
Ever since Bush v. Gore in 2000, which was a ruling that the Republican majority of the Supreme Court, which is not supposed to be a partisan institution. None of these institutions were designed for partisan parties. They decided a presidential election and explicitly said in the ruling, this is not a precedent. You know, it's like they're going, we got our fingers crossed, you know. And from that point on, it's been clear that the Supreme Court is extremely partisan and arbitrary. And so You see it in Texas at lower levels, where the Texas State Supreme Court is openly partisan, elected judges. But it's been 20 years since we convicted Tom DeLay, who was the majority leader of the U.S. House, on campaign violations. And I think it was the Court of Criminal Appeals in Texas threw that out on a straight partisan vote. And so, all these district judges, many of whom are Trump appointees, some of whom are making rules based on the law, or from my perception, based on the law as they understand it, and some of whom are making decisions based on what they think will please Trump. But when it goes up higher, it seems pretty clear that the higher level courts, the Fifth Federal Circuit Court is especially bad, the Ninth Circuit Court is an interesting one, and then the Supreme Court. My bet anytime one of these things goes to the Supreme Court is that Trump's going to get his way. I mean, do any of y'all go into that thinking, oh, Clarence Thomas is going to have a really principled position here? He's just calling balls and strikes and let the chips fall where they may. No. And then these guys are completely paid off as well. So, we're dealing with basically an imperial system with no balance of power. The executive seems to have all the power in this situation, and there's no opposition as such, no coherent opposition. There's a lot of popular opposition, but the difference between 2017 and 2025 has been pretty stark. And in 2017, you had all this media, the Washington Post with "Democracy Dies in Darkness," as if Jeff Bezos is really the light keeper of democracy. But there was this official sort of the official mandarins of the media and the official mandarins of the deep state, including multiple members of Trump's administration, Bill Barr, John Bolton, Pompeo at the CIA, that all on record documented defied the orders of the legally elected president. The whole Russiagate, I'm going to call it a scam because there's more and more evidence coming out every day. There was nothing to that. And yet it paralyzed Trump's first administration and set us further down this road towards war in the Near East, where we're backing Ukraine to the hilt. And it's, but none of that is there this time. The big tech money guys have all clearly gone over to Trump. Some of them, like Peter Thiel and Alex Karp of Palantir, are clearly vying to replace the deep state, or it's like the IT guy pulling a coup in the office because Palantir was created by the CIA. So there's these internal battles within the deep state happening in the Trump administration. It's still impossible for me to figure out what went on with Elon Musk. I mean, and we're also in this environment where companies like Tesla, whose financials make no sense, they lose massive amounts of money every quarter. They're losing market share hand over fist. If we weren't keeping Chinese electric vehicles out of America, Tesla would be dead in the water. And we're becoming the sort of technological hermit kingdom where Americans don't even know what's available in the rest of the world, where most American citizens, like if you grew up in Joplin, Missouri, and most of those people that live in Joplin, Missouri, don't travel outside Joplin, Missouri very often, much less gallivant off to China and Shanghai and see how the first world lives, have no context for what's going on Earth, like no comparison.
There seems to be a situation now where the ship of state is beginning to look like the Titanic, people bailing out. We have Lloyd Doggett.
Optimist.
Yeah, Lloyd Doggett, Texas Democrat, has been there forever. All of a sudden, I thought he would only leave Congress in one of those fancy six-handled wood boxes, but he's gone.
I'm glad you brought that up there, because that was a rare instance of the Democratic Party actually being organized and actually coming together to make a good decision, because the Republicans are redrawing the congressional lines. Doggett's been through this 25 years, and he's a notoriously selfish political actor who never he rarely gives money to the DCCC. He hoards cash. He doesn't coordinate with other campaigns, and he tried to Bigfoot. He said, "I'm claiming the winnable district, and it doesn't, and F you to Greg Kassar, the 30-something progressive, and a coalition of leading Austin Democrats, Glenn Maxey, and for, I can't remember any of the names of the others, but like six people, all of whom were power players, major donors, political actors, neighborhood leaders, put out an op-ed in the Chronicle said that it's time for Lloyd Doggett to step down. We already had two major, we had like the Big Beautiful Bill would not have passed if we hadn't had Democrats die in office because they ran and were elected in their late 70s, one of whom already had a stage four cancer diagnosis when he ran for election. I'm talking about the late Jerry Connally. And within the day of that op-ed appearing in the Chronicle, Doggett stepped aside. And that's a good thing. We don't need a 77 or 98 million, however old Doggett is. And he's still relatively spry. And ironically, he was one of the first Congress people to call on Biden to step aside. But the reality is, if you have a 37-year-old leader in the Progressive Caucus, that's the guy you want to protect and cultivate. It could be a gal, whatever. But the point is, we don't need any more 80-year-olds in Congress because no matter what, the actuarial tables on that are abysmal. If you destroy the career of this 37-year-old, you lose decades of leadership. And Doggett, at most, has what? Two, one term left in him, two terms left in him, you know, four terms left in him. And also, I defy you to name a signature legislative achievement Lloyd Doggett has accomplished in Congress in 50 years. I mean, the guy's been a hallmark of West Austin, and that's about, and occasionally gives a speech, you know, and he's not even particularly senior on committees for somebody who's been in Congress as long as he has. So, you know,
He looks like Abraham Lincoln.
he does. He does have the signature beard, nor is he a famous rail splitter and wrestler. But that to me was a good thing. I mean, it's and you're seeing some signs. I mean, the New York mayoral primary and then general election campaign is a very interesting to watch as well. I mean, Zohan Mamdani is not perfect, and he's not a saint, but he is a breach with standard issue Clinton Obama era Democratic neoliberals. And you can tell he's onto something by who his enemies are, you know, like the business magnates and the and AIPAC and the Israeli lobby and others have just screeched like harpies once he won the nomination. And he won the nomination in commanding fashion after being outspent enormously. I mean, super PACs were pouring money in to back Cuomo. And if they had gotten Cuomo that nomination, I mean, look at Cuomo. This is a guy who stepped down from the governorship of New York in 2021 in disgrace. It was a sex harassment, a series of sex harassment scandals that brought him down. But this is a guy who during COVID took money from nursing home interests and sent old people back into nursing homes knowing that there was COVID in there. I mean, killed like tens of thousands of people through his mismanagement of COVID. And if they were able to prop that fossil up and get him into office, and it would have depended on a low turnout campaign and a completely demoralized electorate, the gates would have been open for things like Rahm Emanuel as the presidential nominee. He's still trying, but I'm much more confident that the disgraced former mayor of Chicago is not going to be the Democratic Party nominee, which to me is a good thing. I wish there were more national analogs to Mamdani. I mean, the closest thing, I guess, would be, I mean, Bernie Sanders, again, is way too old, and we've all seen that movie too many times. AOC maybe will run, but she seems fairly cautious in the senatorial race. And by AOC, I mean Alexandria, whatever, Cortez. I can't remember her name.
Ocasio-Cortez,
Yeah. But otherwise, the left of the Democratic Party, you know, I mean, it's been systematically purged. I mean, Jesse Jackson in 1988 was kind of the last vestige before Bernie Sanders. You know, so you're still seeing people like Gavin Newsom experimenting. I don't know if you're familiar with the horror they call dark woke. Texas Representative Jasmine Crockett is a big exemplar of that. And it's sort of we're going to mimic Trump's crude, crass stylings, and I'm going to cuss a lot and call people names. And that'll do instead of, say, a populist economic policy. You know, you can be as pro-Israel as you want and as pro-big money as you want. If you say F you to Trump, well then, you know, you're the resistance. It's, you know, Gavin Newsom is like having extreme right wingers on his podcast and going on the podcasts of all kinds of right wingers, bashing trans people, rounding up the homeless, you know, doing photo ops where he's throwing people's tents into smashing machines and ghastly stuff like that. And then positioning himself as the alternative to Trump, even as he, you know, vetoes, you know, copyright legislation, like the California had a, you know, was it, their news companies had a going suit and legislation writing to really impact Google. And Newsom went in there and vetoed that bill. There's numerous other ones. He killed single payer after campaigning on it. He did that one in a pretty artful way where it never came to a vote in the legislature, but it didn't come to a vote because he made it clear he'd veto it if it did. You know, so this guy's like a complete fraud as far as what policies they offer. And Democrats have been doing that for a long, long time. So plus, and I don't know if you guys have noticed this one, but we're in this completely weird political blender where there's so much stress on the empire and so much confusion and lack of leadership on both sides, you know, on all sides of the political spectrum, that you're seeing things like, I don't know if you're familiar with Sean King, who's a Black Lives Matter sort of adjacent online personality, extremely scandalous. I mean, this guy's had scandals about everything as to whether he's actually African-American or not, multiple business entities that he's allegedly started that the money didn't go where it was supposed to go, or fundraising drives where the money didn't go where it was supposed to go. But anyway, he is nonetheless an outspoken advocate for African-American rights, against police brutality, et cetera, et cetera. And recently online, he and Jake Shields, who's a former UFC title fighter, and extreme right wing, I would call him, I don't know that I'd call him a Nazi, but fucking close, and definitely anti-Semitic, definitely racist, super homophobic. I watched this guy go from, you know, one of these bland, very boring fighter who never said anything, you know, did the usual, I've trained hard and I'm going to beat the guy, into more and more edgy stuff online throughout the Trump era, becoming just a complete out unabashed bigot. And now he and Sean King and also the Jewish comedian Dave Smith have all united online and have their followings supporting this. And Jake Shields has a following that's literally like, why are you hanging out with that Jew? You know, this is how anti-Semitic this guy and his crowd are. And because they all three oppose the genocide in Gaza, they're publicly aligned together. And you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene out there, who was involved in January 6th, so I think should have been, you know, looking at serious prison time for what she did on January 5th and 6th, 2021. She's out there condemning the Gaza genocide and AIPAC's lobbying in far stronger terms than anybody on the Democratic side. It's really crazy. It's absolutely crazy making. And if you follow politics with, I mean, a lot of people follow politics with a good guy, bad guy lens. My team, their team. And that's been one of the most alarming things to see, is both sides of the political spectrum just completely going partisan, total hypocritical. You know, I'm against it when the other guy does it, I'm for it when my guy does it, and they're like Stalinists. They're willing to change their political, you know, they're going to agree with whatever their party does at any time. But the things like the Gaza genocide, and this isn't the first genocide that the U.S. has funded and armed and essentially been responsible for. I mean, you know, East Timor in the 70s, Indonesia, island of Bali in the 60s. I mean, a million people died in the Indonesian coup in the 1960s that the CIA planned and orchestrated. But that wasn't on TikTok. That wasn't live streamed. It came out in newspaper reports months or years after the fact, and much easier to bury. We're responsible for the Cambodian genocide, the killing fields, you know, Vietnam, Laos. We've, as an empire, killed millions, tens of millions of people. But this particular one has been so public, it's really put a stress on our political system, because again, our legislature is entirely bought and paid for. And so you've got a situation where something like 8% of Democrats currently support Israel, and 88 or 90% of Democratic congressional members support what Israel's doing. It creates a very weird political dynamic. And especially when you get situations like Richie Torres in the Bronx, where he was elected with AIPAC money. They poured gazillions of dollars to take out Jamal Bowman. Cori Bush in Missouri was taken out. I can't remember the stooge that was voted in her place, but again, with tons of AIPAC money. And Richie Torres recently did a podcast with Adam Friedman, I believe is his name. He's a online comedian who gained fame on the illustrious Come Town podcast, and which is produced a movie star and Friedman, who's a big podcaster. And he had Richie Torres on his show, and Friedman's having this emotional experience of saying, hey, I was raised as a Zionist. I'm Jewish. My family's Jewish. I did the trip to Israel. I was taught my whole life, you know, we're the victims of the Holocaust. We can't ever let it happen again. And now we're committing it. And he's literally in tears. And this is a young, you know, millennial comedian who does edgy, you know, he's a total edgelord, sarcastic, ironic guy. And so seeing him actually have a sincere emotional moment in the face of this congressman, this Dominican congressman, or maybe he's Puerto Rican, from the Bronx, who's got no emotional affect whatsoever, who's literally applying, well, that's not what the ADL said. The ADL, like, you know, it's extremely strange. And it puts this tension where you've got massive audiences that have seen enough of the horrors of what's going on in Gaza that they're not buying any of the Israel's got a right to protect itself stuff at this point. And yet there's no elected representatives for them speaking out against this. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, of all people, is alone, basically. Thomas Massie, I think, of Kentucky is another one. But, you know, it's not as surprising for Massie because he's like the last congressman from Ron Paul land. You know, I mean, he's always been this libertarian outlier. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she had Megyn Kelly, remember the former Fox host. Marjorie Taylor Greene went on Megyn Kelly's show, and Megyn Kelly, and they're both like, oh, we hate Hamas. Oh, we're all for Israel. But boy, AIPAC sure is kind of bullies. And they, you know, if you even question them a little bit, they, you know, send people to attack you. And I was like, whoa, we've got Megyn Kelly criticizing AIPAC. It's, you know, these are strange days. These are strange days. And I feel this stuff is like the creaking and the tremors before an earthquake. You know, this is the, you know, if you live in California, you know, and the dog starts acting funny, you might want to pay attention. You know, something's coming. And I feel like that something's coming. And again, all the economic statistics are completely cooked. If you followed it during the Biden years, I mean, CPI, the insurance, our official insurance tracker has been massively manipulated forever and doesn't include fuel or energy or food prices, which are the two things, and real estate. Those are the three things that most impact people from inflation, and they're all exempted from CPI. But I noticed that during the Biden presidency, every jobs report would come out and it would be pretty good. Although if you dive down, it would be, you know, like, all government jobs and part-time jobs. There weren't really a big private sector on, but every quarter they would revise it back down. You know, they'd come out with a new jobs report. Here's the new jobs report. It's pretty good. By the way, the last one, it turns out, really wasn't quite as good as we said. You know, statistics and facts and all that. And then just keep on going down the road. And so now Trump has openly just fired the person in charge of this, who I believe was at least honestly putting out the numbers according to these formulas that are manipulated. But now it's just all bets are off. And you know, and when you've got things like Tesla and the AI boom that make no economic fundamental sense, and we don't even know if we're getting accurate information.
It sounds like we're watching a reality TV show.
Yeah, except there's no editor at the end of the season putting it together in a coherent
and no manner. Reality. Yeah, I mean, the reality is all scripted.
Yeah, and if that, I mean, it seems like one of those, you know, really badly improvised reality TV shows that they're trying to slap together in a coherent narrative. And then you look at the CDC, and you know, as best I can tell, the very top people at the CDC completely fucking botched COVID, mostly under Trump, but also under Biden. But the people below them, we're very professional and world, you know, best in class globally. And now we're chasing off that class of people at the CDC. So we're even worse off. And, you know, the reckoning with COVID hasn't been, oh yeah, well, it actually was airborne. You know, like have you noticed if I go to my doctor's office or my kids orthodontist, they have ventilation in those buildings, in those offices. They have the little ventilation towers in multiple corners all over the office because they know COVID is airborne. And if you clean the air indoors, you have much less chance of transmitting COVID. Now, if they were really on the ball, they'd be wearing masks, but that's become socially prohibited even more than it was before the pandemic. But instead of going back and saying, hey, turns out it was airborne, we should probably put ventilation systems in schools that keep them cleaner and blah, blah. No, we just don't track COVID. And this was all done under Biden. You don't track the COVID in the wastewater. You don't update the tests. Our current publicly available COVID tests give false negatives 60% of the time. What is the effing point of that? And if you do have a diagnosed case of COVID, it's not like your insurance company's calling you up, hey, if you get long COVID, which you have an increasing chance of every time you get infected, we're here for you. No, they're not there for you. They're going to stonewall and deny any claims. And you know, both parties seem to agree with that. Back to work, peasants. You know, we've got a commercial real estate empire to save here. You know, I don't know what to say. It's extremely alarming and disorienting, and you can't believe what, you know, the fact sets that we've had in the past, economic fact sets, weather fact sets, health fact sets, we've managed in a bipartisan fashion. I mean, Trump's obviously been the accelerator of this, but the Democrats have been just as bad when the data wasn't what they wanted to hear. And now we don't have good data. And I don't know if it got any coverage in the world y'all were following, but they just had a massive, I think it's still going on, a massive international meeting in China. And Modi was there and Putin was there. And I mean, all of the global leaders were there except for our little set. And people were contrasting, you know, the photos of the glorious parades and all the world leaders standing shoulder to shoulder with their flags in China compared with the European leaders all huddled around Trump's desk like a bunch of school children and completely abasing themselves in front of this demagogue that they had all opposed vocally before his re-election. And it's only because our news media doesn't cover that stuff that more Americans don't realize, wow, we are increasingly isolated. We are increasingly unpopular globally. Like if you think, you know, I mean, the vast majority of Americans are against what Israel and America is doing in Gaza. Well, in the rest of the world where their media is not quite as censored, they're way against it and they blame us, you know, and people aren't buying our bullshit anymore. We can't hold ourselves up as, oh, we're the international law and rights and norms. And, you know, FDR and the post-war order, we tried to set up a system of international laws that theoretically would outlast our empire, but tie the next great powers into a web of obligations. You know, you can't commit this kind of war crime. You can't do this. You can't invade a neighbor, all this stuff. And G.W. Bush basically threw all that stuff out the window 20 years ago, just like he tore up all the almost all the nuclear treaties with Russia. Well, Russia paid attention to that stuff and immediately went to work on new generations of missile technology, which they've unveiled. You know, in 2018, when Putin first announced he had hypersonic missiles, our official response was, no, he doesn't. That's not physically possible. Well, he's demonstrated he does have hypersonic missiles repeatedly and irrefutably over the past, you know, 4 years in Ukraine. And the Iranians have hypersonic missiles too. And we know the Chinese have hypersonic missiles. And those things make our vaunted carrier groups moot. Hell, the Yemenis chased off 4 U.S. carrier groups in an 18-month period. The Yemenis, they don't even have control. The Houthis, they don't even have control of all of Yemen, right? We're being humiliated by a ragtag bunch. It's like the Bad News Bears beating the New York Yankees. It's insane that we're losing a naval conflict with the Houthis and starting a war with Iran, who's an actual major world power with 90 million people and a coherent culture. It's absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane. And I'm honestly most afraid that the U.S. and or Israel or Britain, I'm very alarmed by Britain. Keep your eyes on those SOBs, because the MI6 never got the memo that Britain doesn't have an empire anymore. And they are hip deep in our councils and Israel's councils. The Mossad, CIA, and MI6 are way involved. Anytime a Ukrainian group commits a terror assassination in Russia, or they set off drones in Russia, or they assassinate Iranian leaders, or they just murdered the Yemeni prime minister the other day, MI6 has a hand in that. I mean, obviously it's us first and foremost, but the MI6 punches, I shouldn't even be saying this out loud, but they punch way above their weight, and they're extremely scary and have no more moral scruples than they did in the 30s when they were killing Indians and Pakistanis by the millions. I mean, and so I'm very concerned. Obviously, Xi in China is a dictator, ruthless, dangerous. China's never invaded anybody, not since Tibet anyway.
Hey, man, I'd take Xi over Trump any day of the week.
I'd take Xi over anybody in our leadership, I'm sad to say. And yeah, you know, I'd take Putin over most of the people in our leadership. Putin will sit down and do a four-hour interview with the press, anything they want to ask. And his problem is he lays in so many facts and historical analogies, it's tedious. It's, you know, but the guy is educated. And the good guy, bad guy, infantilized version of events we get in the United States, the only thing you're allowed to say in the U.S. on mainstream media is Putin bad, Putin bad. You know, there's a lot more to Putin than Putin bad. Yes, Putin is bad. He's real bad and not a guy you want to just fuck with for no reason. And you know, Bush and Cheney announced in 2008 that they wanted Ukraine and Georgia in NATO. Everybody at that time, Angela Merkel, our own Ambassador Bob Burns, who was the ambassador to Moscow at that time and later was Biden's head of the CIA, he wrote a memo that WikiLeaks released that said, "Nyet means nyet. Do not even think about putting Ukraine or Georgia in NATO, because every single power player in Russia will go to war over that." And if you have any acquaintance with the history of Russia, if you've heard the 1812 Overture, for God's sake, or you've seen a documentary about Hitler getting to the edges of Moscow, or Sweden invading them multiple times, you know, Russia is extremely, with good reason, paranoid about being invaded from the West. And from Ukraine to Moscow, there is nothing in between those two points, just flat land. And they're touchy about this. And our official stance has been, we don't care about Russian interests. You know, you've got somebody like Kallas, who's the EU foreign minister or something, which the EU shouldn't even have a foreign, it has no official geostrategic powers. Now they've got a foreign minister, I believe from Estonia, who comes out and says the craziest shit about Russia all the time. Like, what is Estonia going to do to Russia? Nothing. Estonia is a tiny parking lot on the edge of Russia. Russia's like a giant sow, and they're a tiny little piglet and a very small pin. Don't bite the giant sow you're sharing the stall with, people. And we're supposed to back these people up to the point of nuclear confrontation. It's insane. I mean, I remember when I woke up at some point in the 2000s and realized Albania was in NATO. Albania? Like, why on earth do we have a mutual defense pact with Albania? Albania has nothing to offer us geostrategically except problems. And they're a massive hub of all kinds of crime. I mean, they're involved in drug shipping through Haiti and human trafficking and just what the hell? You know, what are we doing? And we've just been on this automatic pilot mode of relentless aggressive expansionism. And we're led by people who I believe, and from having worked with them, you know, that's been my experience with every one of them I worked for, no concept of physical kinetic reality when it comes to force. Like when Pelosi was confronted with January 6th, she really thought, I'll just call the phone and the good police will take the bad guys away. You know, like there was no thought into, okay, who's actually got control of the U.S. Marshals? Where are they? How many of them are there? Where's the Capitol Police Corps? You know, they had a sick out that day. If you look into it, the Capitol Police Corps basically no-showed on January 6th. If you compare the massive shows of force they had when Black Lives Matter were doing marches, they clearly saw that as dangerous enemies and we're going to get all Darth Vader'd up and put on a show of force. When it's the good old boys from MAGA, hell, I bet you that there was some Capitol Police on the wrong side of that parade. And the people that were left, you know, were the African American ones, the women ones, the misfits and the do-gooders, not in their storm gear. And it never occurred to Pelosi that, you know, you might want to actually look and see who's what. You know, I mean, like if you read about the Bolshevik Revolution or the October Revolution in 1917, Trotsky and company had an absolute handle on which naval units were on their side and where were those guys, which military units were still reporting to the Mensheviks and where were those guys and who had who outnumbered and can we get to this radio station first? Can we get to this arsenal first? You know, can we surround them in the city block? That kind of thing. Even Ronald Reagan, when he was the head of the Screenwriters Guild, would have to plan out a kinetic response to organized Stalinist activity within the Screen Actors Guild. And it was literally a matter of, we're going to have Charlton Heston and John Wayne standing behind Robert Mitchum. Like they'd go into a meeting and they'd see, holy shit, the commies have, they had a plan, a system for breaking up meetings. You have a guy in the middle, you have guys at each of the corners and they disrupt and they ask questions and they start shoving matches. Well, since they knew who all the communists in Hollywood were and they knew who the big tough communists were, and they go in a room and there's the tic-tac-toe board laid out and there's Bob Mitchum and I can't remember who the other big left wingers were, they just made sure they had two right wingers for each one of those big left wingers, you know, like actual dealing with the ugly reality that physical force is the trump card on this reality. And nobody, if you watch the U.S. generals talking about the Ukraine war, I mean, these dipshits, you know, McChrystal and McCaffrey and Kellogg and Hodges, they will say shit like in 2023, Ukraine is going to be in the Crimea by August, no problem. You know, once these Ruskies see the Western armored weapons, they're just going to melt in terror and we're just going to be rolling down to Sevastopol in a matter of days. And then when the Ukrainians get slaughtered because they had no air support, remember the Bay of Pigs? I mean, it's like these things echo over and over again, get absolutely slaughtered. Those same generals are back on the TV the next week like it never happened, boldly predicting, if we just up the ante on Russia, if we just pressure them a little harder, if we just give Ukraine even more missiles. Like, we've already hit the Kremlin with drones. We've backed terror attacks in theaters in Moscow that killed hundreds of people. This is very much like the ISIS attacks in Paris that killed hundreds of people that we were probably behind too. Have y'all noticed how Syria has been taken over by ISIS and Al-Qaeda and we're all for it? Like, at some point you got to put the dots together and realize there is a big bad guy and we're paying tax dollars to him. And the bad guy in charge, it's like when you look at Palantir or the economics of OpenAI and you get to this point where you're like, look, either I'm crazy or economic fundamentals don't apply. You know, either I'm right or every billionaire, and every billionaire is wrong. And you're like, well, if they're so stupid, why are they billionaires and I'm not? You know, and you start to think, well, they're playing a different game. And the smart people in the U.S. military industrial complex, they have had a big win from the Ukraine situation and a huge win from Gaza. And it doesn't matter how it's hurt our international standing. It doesn't matter how much it's eroded our military power. They cashed out big and continue to cash out. And if you go to Fredericksburg, Virginia right now, or any of the, and you know, the rich Silver Springs, Maryland, any of the big beltway suburbs, the McMansions are just boom, exploding because of all the wealth that these people that work for Palantir and Northrop Grumman and what used to be Raytheon, et cetera, are just piling up. And they don't care if we win or lose. 20 years and $1 trillion in Afghanistan? Well, heck, no problem. 800 billion of that ended up in our pockets. We don't care what happens in Afghanistan. They might have some interest in how the heroin trade globally goes, but that's something you can arbitrage and hedge against. The main thing is they got their money from selling all those helicopters and all those fortresses and all that stuff and all the contractors that were hired and sent around. And they're doing the same shit again in Ukraine and Gaza and Iran. Looks like they're trying to do it in Venezuela. They're threatening to attack cartels in Mexico. I mean, I can rant and yell all day if you
Well,
want to
the
let me, but if you want to
thing
steer me in a
this, I believe.
with Trump and the military, he has restructured the military quite a bit, getting rid of the people that actually knew how things were supposed to work. And
I would quibble on that. He's put in his loyalists and replaced people that were not loyal to him. I would argue that nobody in the higher brass of the Pentagon has had a clue since at least the Colin Powell generation in the early 90s. So go
yeah.
ahead.
Now he's moving the Space Force to Alabama.
The Space Force.
Well, you know why? It's because of that song, Stars Fell on Alabama.
Is Trump old enough to, I don't think he's,
It's
no,
probably
it's Tom
too young for
Lehrer. It's
that.
Tom Lehrer.
Those are his people.
No.
Don't you remember Tom Lehrer?
He just
We'll try
passed
to
away
stay
recently.
serene and calm when Alabama gets the bomb.
Oh. So long, Mom. I'm off to drop the bomb.
Well, yeah, I mean, this time Trump has put in loyalists. And that was one of the things about January 6th was it was an appallingly bad coup attempt. If Trump was your guy, you should really have been embarrassed and alarmed that that was the best he could do as far as trying to overthrow the government. It was absolutely pathetic. He had a very late, from what I can piece together, he had a very late and very limited attempt to get control of the Pentagon before that, and made no progress. And at the protests at Lafayette Square earlier that summer, he had a general, I think it was Mattis, who appeared with Trump at the PR opportunity, the photo op, but then later was like, "What are we doing? I'm not sending troops in there to back Trump up." So he's gotten rid of people who have those kind of qualms, but there's no evidence that anybody on either side of that debate has any actual military competence. If you look at who's been in the Joint Chiefs of Staff and so on for the past 20 something years, it's a lot like the Supreme Court where they all went to the same colleges. The guys in the military there were all in the same, not just they all went to West Point, they were all in the same specific class track at West Point. They were all in the same specific Army Rangers program. I mean, it's this extremely nepo, don't rock the boat, kiss up, kick down kind of thing. And their game to a man and a woman is to get the big paying job at one of the defense companies. Like Lloyd Austin, who was Biden's defense secretary, he was coming straight off a gig as an executive for one of the big military industrial complex companies. And not only do we have a tradition of not having military leadership in that position, but we certainly don't roll people straight out of, I can't remember if he was at Raytheon or which one, but it's just like Dick Cheney at Halliburton right before the war on terror. It's not good practice. It's extremely corrupting, and it leads to extremely, at a minimum, extremely questionable decision making. Like one of the things that puzzled me for a long, long time was, why did Dick Cheney go from being what they called the A team in the Bush foreign policy class? And I mean, I'm not a fan of James Baker and Brent Scowcroft and G.H.W. Bush. I mean, those were pretty rough, bare knuckle guys. They were way to the right of me on the political spectrum, but they were competent. And Cheney was aligned with them against what they called the B team, which was Don Rumsfeld and all the neocons that were Cheney's handmaidens during the War of Terror. Douglas Fife. I'm blanking on a bunch of names of those terrible shitbags. But and then, later, I was reading a book, and it turns out when Cheney was at Halliburton, he made an extremely bad investment right out of the gate and bought a company that had massive, I'm like hundreds of millions of dollars in asbestos Superfund liabilities. And that was like the first thing he did as CEO was saddle the company with this massive liability. And if you look at the people who are on the board of Halliburton when Cheney did that, these were not men you want to trifle with. These were not dudes that you're just going to go, oopsie, I cost you several hundred million dollars. Sorry, guys, I'm going back to the government service. Good luck with that. No. I believe that Cheney had a very vested interest in triggering wars like the invasion of Iraq in 2003, such that his old employer could profit off of it and get his black mark or red mark off the books. And you know, when you try to analyze things in a granular way, who are these specific individuals? What are their interests? And what did they do? And how does that align with those interests? And you almost never find somebody who does things that clash with the interests of his corporate, you know, sponsors or employers or whatever. I mean, if you find,
Owners.
owners, if you find a congressperson who's taken massive money from their local utility monopoly, you're not going to find many votes where they go up against the interests of that entity. It just doesn't happen anymore. It used to happen in the LBJ days and the Bobby Kennedy days. That might be what part of what got JFK killed was Bobby Kennedy, you know, old man Kennedy making a deal with the mafia and Bobby Kennedy not getting the memo and prosecuting those guys. But we haven't seen anything like that in decades and decades. Honest politicians stay bought in our system, and they're all bought.
Well,
And
those guys were getting shot, right?
a lot of them did, yeah. And
Yeah.
again, who did that? You know, and we know pretty well that the FBI was involved in Malcolm X. We've got pretty strong reason to believe they were involved in the killing of MLK. There's a lot of suspects in the killing of JFK, including the CIA, including the mafia, including Cuban fascists, including Mossad, because JFK tried to strip AIPAC of its or make them register as a foreign national lobby. And then he turns up dead. And you know, Trump claims that he saw the files and that was too bad, too embarrassing, too negatively impact. It would make such a negative impact on people's faith in the government if he revealed what he knew about the JFK assassination. You know, and we're not supposed to ask questions about like who tried to kill Trump this last summer, who tried to assassinate the Prime Minister of Slovakia, who's been opposed to the Ukraine war. You know, we're having Ukrainian leaders. There was one that was gunned down the street just the other day in Western Kiev. One of the architects of the Maidan Revolution just got murdered. And apparently, allegedly, the story is by a guy whose son was press ganged into the Ukrainian military and killed. And he was like, I didn't care about this guy. He was just the most powerful guy I could get close to with a gun. You know, it would have been Poroshenko, who was the first prime minister. I mean, one thing to keep in mind, Zelensky was elected against the Maidan Revolution. He was the opposition party. He ran on a peace platform. He ran on a let's negotiate with Russia, let's legalize speaking the Russian language, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like the day after he got into office, he's changed his tune completely. And you know, what happened there? It's like the old Bill Hicks joke about the president on his first day in the job, and they show you a whole new vantage point of the Kennedy assassination. And then, any questions? And the joke was, yeah, what's my agenda? You know, like that's, I think, where we're at. We've seen with, I mean, I used to be dismissive of all these conspiracy theories, but after Harvey Weinstein, after Bill Cosby, after Epstein, after Jimmy Savile in Britain, all bets are off, man. I mean, there is rot at the very top, and it seems to be systematic and organized. And, you know, here we are.
Well, I mean, conspiracy theories can be crazy, but there are conspiracies.
Absolutely. People go to jail for it all the time. I mean, three people organizing a crime is a conspiracy.
And there's a lot of conspiracies that people don't go to jail for.
Because you're
Those are
paranoid
the.
doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Yep. And, you know, so stay paranoid. You know,
So, hey, so my question for you is, how do we fix all this?
I mean, I wish I had an answer. I think it's going to take complete collapse. I mean, at this point, I personally don't even believe in industrialized civilization. I'm not sure I believe agriculture was a good idea. So,
yeah, there's a lot of talk about that.
Yeah.
I've been hearing it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like I wrote any of those books, but I've read a couple. And I don't know. I mean, it seems pretty clear we're in one of these, you know, 80-year crises, like you know, the Civil War, then World War II, and now it's time for another crisis that's been going on for most of a decade. Eventually, that's going to come to some kind of conclusion, hopefully, in the next 5-10 years. And hopefully that won't end in nuclear annihilation or a massive nuclear exchange. And I hope that America, the USA, does not become a hermit kingdom where we seal out new technological developments, we seal out international travel, and we wallow in our own crapulence for the next 80 years and turn on each other. I mean, my hope is for as soft a landing as possible and for a new international order that breaks the spine of the legacy of Eurocolonialism. I mean, I don't think there's any point in pretending that that was a net win for humanity. I mean, we are killing the planet, and we've already killed the planet. I mean, if you were a Native American in 1400, odds are your descendants didn't make it, you know? I mean, and that was mostly germs, but a lot of that was bad intentions, especially in North America, where the UK, you know, the Anglos, us, committed a continent-wide genocide. All I can see is we've got a lot of bad karma coming our way, and you know,
maybe 31 Atlas is on the way to straighten us out.
Maybe, but I mean, we're not even a literate society, you know. We're not, and AI has just made things dramatically worse in an incredibly short period of time in a way that's completely unsustainable.
But wait, again, AI is literate.
Is it? It's kind a of. Random word shuffler. But, you know, and it makes me, I feel like that the stated function of AI is different than what they actually think it's good for. What it actually seems to be really, really good for is addling people and persuading people of bad ideas and controlling people. And that is something I think Peter Thiel and people like him are willing to throw all kinds of money into the fire pit to achieve.
I don't know. I mean, I use AI.
It can be quite useful,
things,
but
it's
but
a
it's
nice
not,
assistant, you know.
It's not economically viable, though, John. I mean,
no,
what,
I know.
What
I
they're
understand
spending,
that.
What they're spending to let you to let somebody write a resume and cover letter without putting any thought into it, does not justify the production of that of junk paper. I mean, like you're even seeing the legal system where courts are being flooded with AI-generated filings that are systemically rotten, that are full of false case law and threaten to obscure the record. I mean, nothing that we're doing with large language models justifies the cash outlay unless...
Or the energy outlay. Yeah.
Or the energy outlay, unless there's some other agenda, some other function we don't understand, which I believe is persuasion and control, you know? And
well,
in which
you know,
case the hallucinations are not a problem. If your goal is to addle and confuse the population, who cares if the tool that you have them tethered to spews out incorrect facts, you know?
I mean, I've always liked my hallucinations, but
we're at
the end of the hour and we're just getting into AI, so maybe you ought to come back in a month and talk about AI.
Sure, happy to do it. Okay. To the extent I understand it. But follow Gary Marcus and Ed Zitrone. Gary Marcus is a technical skeptic about AI and a leading AI scientist, and Ed Zitrone is a business skeptic. And then, blank on the name. There's a guy, Ben Jordan, who's a musician and a genius who does a YouTube channel that has analyzed a lot of this stuff really well.
Yeah, Ted Gioia has been
Molly
talking
White.
About it too.
Yeah, White Joyce. Is good.
Who?
Molly White.
Ah, yes, she is.
No Joe Rogan.
Well.
Joe Rogan isn't even funny. He's not even a good fight
sometimes
commenter.
He
That's
does
the...
interesting, but he does do sometimes interesting interviews with people.
Yeah,
he's willing to let them talk for 3 hours. quite often some interesting stuff
emerging. Yeah, he's definitely, I mean, you know, the idea that Democrats shouldn't go on Joe Rogan is pretty stupid, but
well,
yeah.
We'll come back for AI, we'll do an AI and Joe Rogan.
All right. Okay. That sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Okay, thanks for coming. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
You can stay in touch with Plutopia at plutopia.io. On Facebook, look for @Plutopia News. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.